Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I am Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And what show number is this?
It's mid to late 90s.
Okay.
It's like an era.
Yeah, it really is. A bunch of very bad music, a lot of Matchbox 20, maybe some Four Non-Blondes.
Possibly.
Vertical Horizon. If you're talking, that late 90s portion of music was really just kind of a dead zone.
Right.
Like, it was the post-grunge, I don't know what era, but it was, a lot of navel-gazing.
I much prefer the 80s. I'll take the 80s any day of the week.
I'll take the 80s, I'll take grunge, I'll take gangster rap, just that era of the late 90s. Like, and unfortunately for when you're my age, our age, that was...
Well, we have a slightly different era, our ages.
I'm 5 years older, I think.
Six.
Yeah. Six, really. But... Yeah, that was the era of you would buy CDs because it was pre-digital music. Kids, that's how it used to work. Like, you would go to a record store and you would buy an album.
This is a physical location.
A physical location you would walk into, and you would maybe, they had like little listening stations, and you would go up and you would put headphones on.
I forgot about those.
Yeah, and you'd be like, oh, I want to listen to Victoria Williams, and is this CD any good? And so you'd go to your local warehouse or Tower Records, or what did you guys have up here to buy?
Tower Records.
Really?
That was
in Boston.
I wonder
what happened to them.
Maybe that was their flagship store.
No, the one Tower Records on Sunset was the flagship store.
Where's that?
LA. In LA, yeah.
No, it was Boston. It was Newbury.
But we used to go and buy things, but sometimes you'd go and they were at the right price point. So there was a lot of, you're buying a CD and it's $10.99. Like, that was not enough money to dissuade you. So like, if you took the trouble of going to the record store, you were probably going to buy something because you had a few bucks burning a hole in your pocket. So you wind up in the late 90s with a lot of really bad CDs. And I think when we moved from our house in Kansas in whatever it was, 2006, 2007... I took every CD that I owned and burned all of them, not like doused them with gasoline and lit them on fire, but I took every CD that I owned and burned them and put them on my iPod.
Where's that these
Again,
days?
Again, that's a thing.
Yeah, right.
I still have all the digital music. It's all on my computer, but I all those CDs are in a box in the basement that I've never had the need to open since. It's crazy.
It's like a treasure chest.
Yeah, but you go through and you, like, the iPod used to curate your music and give you a playlist of 90s, and you go through and you listen to it and you're like, there's a lot of garbage in here that, and literally garbage, the band, but garbage wasn't garbage. But there was a lot of just absolute trash in there from the 90s. So anyway, we're still Fox on Sports for now, I guess, getting back to the original point. So we are going to have some guests later on in the show that I'm kind of excited about, and I would have been excited to have one of them as a student athlete as a guest, but we get to have her on for another reason entirely, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But when you were playing, okay, here's another weird thing, and I just thought of this yesterday. I meant to text you and I saw it. There was a guy standing on a corner in Manchester wearing a Greeley soccer sweatshirt.
Oh, there's my guy.
Shocked.
Did you pull over immediately?
It was crazy. Maggie and I were driving to her baseball game, and I was, somehow you came up because we had talked about moving the couch, and Hansen helped me move a couch in my house yesterday. Maggie and I are talking about this, and I'm like, literally the word Hansen is still hanging in the air, and I see a guy wearing Greeley soccer sweatshirt or shirt. And I go, that is so strange.
She goes, what?
I'm like, that's the high school he went to in Maine. So apparently there's somebody in Manch who is affiliated with Greeley soccer.
Oh, that's great to hear. And this is, so our show is airing on Saturday, later today in the future.
Yes.
Well, I'll be in that annual golf tournament that we talked about a couple weeks ago. So,
oh, nice.
Looking forward to it.
So when you played sports in high school, did it matter to you if any, or high school or in college for that matter, did it matter to you whether anybody was actually at the event?
I mean, it didn't matter in the sense of, you know, I know what my job is and I'm focused on performance and playing a certain way, giving it the same effort no matter what we're talking about. First game of the season on the road, at home, in the playoffs, you know, that doesn't change, but it certainly can affect performance. So no matter what you try to do to say, I'm going to put out all the outside distractions of what this situation is like, what the gym is like, are there people here, are there not, and you try to play the same way every game, you can't really account for the impact that a crowd can have. You know, if whether you're on the road or at home, you know, you'll hear professional athletes talk a lot about you're on the road and there's nothing like quieting the crowd.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Right? Or you're at home and the crowd goes wild and it gives you that boost of energy. So you have to take advantage of the situation. If you're at home, you try to benefit from that energy, use it to boost your performance. If you're on the road, you have to have that mentality of, you know, it's me against the crowd, and I'm certainly not going to let them impact my performance in a negative way. I'm going to use it to motivate me to, hey, I want to quiet them.
Is a crowd ever a distraction to you when you're an athlete?
Well, it can be.
Okay.
And
I'm saying like a home crowd of, all right, even you're used to, I'll think of a random sport, fencing. You're used to being a fencer. I don't even know what the proper terms are, and nobody please tell me, but this is what you're used to doing. And now all of a sudden, instead of having 10, 20 people there, now you have hundreds of people there. Is that potentially distracting you, or does that narrow your focus even more?
Well, it could be. And that's the challenge you have to be prepared for, is you can't let that impact your performance. And so the thing that I think about is the more experience you have, the better. And so that's why in high school, you've got 4 years. And so if you have some players who played as a freshman or sophomore, the great thing is they've experienced the crowds at home in a way. So now they're used to that. And when they are now leading the team as juniors and seniors, they're prepared for it.
Right. It's, the story that's often told is, and some people have an easier time dealing with it. And some people have a harder time dealing with it, where it's truly a distraction, where a guy goes from playing in front of a few hundred or a few thousand people playing AAA to all of a sudden it's sold out Dodger Stadium with 56,000 people there and it's loud. And not to mention the fact that you might be picking the ball up out of a different background, or you might be going to shoot a free throw and you're used to being in an empty gym, and now you're at Cameron Indoor and there's a bunch of stuff going on right behind the hoop. Like, those things are there and they're designed to distract you. And that's, much has been made, I guess, recently about getting minor league baseball players to the major leagues sooner. But part of going through the ranks in the minor leagues is to adjust from, this is college where I might be playing in front of a few hundred people, to this is low A or short A or rookie ball where it might be a few thousand. And that's part of the adjustment too, is getting used to playing in a progressively bigger and fuller ballpark in front of more people.
Yeah. And of course, for some players, you prefer the minor league experience when you're playing in front of 6,000 or 8,000 fans. Cause if you play for somebody like the Rays, I mean, that's what the major league experience
right.
is. You only
yes.
get 8,000 fans
in a cavernous ballpark.
Right. So you're used to that. So it's good to get both. But we're going to be talking about that, the high school fan experience. So I'm remembering one incident from high school that plays into this. My freshman year in the basketball game, I got fouled as time expired. We were down two. So I had to go to the line and make two free throws to force overtime.
Yep.
And we're at home and the crowd goes silent. I'm there at the line. First shot, back rim and out. Missed it. And my memory is that it wasn't that the quietness of the crowd affected me. I was amped up, really excited to try to make the free throw. So I put more into it. I hit the back rim. So the thing I learned from that moving forward was, in a high pressure situation like that at the free throw line, you have to try to just take a smooth shot, and you have to know that you're amped up. It's sort of like the golfer who, big situation, you know, he normally hits his 7-iron 170, but he's so amped up that he hits it 185.
Right.
So you have to know what's at stake, and you have to get used to training your body to adjust based on something like the crowd or the quietness of the crowd and the moment.
I have to imagine that, you've played in front of far more people than I have, but the adjustment to I mean, it's almost like, to use your golf analogy, like, okay, I know what the wind is. The wind is 5 miles an hour behind me. And so in order to stick this, I'm going to have to hit it slightly softer than I would to get it, to have it wind up where I want it to go. Because there are other factors in play, whether it's my adrenaline, whether it's you've just been fouled, you know, is it a hard foul? Is it a soft foul? You're dusting yourself off. Like, hard foul is tough to get back to the free throw line and shoot because you're halfway angry and you're halfway proving something. Like, there are a bunch of different things that are sort of entering your bloodstream. But I don't know, the story that I started on and then ran off to another one, Joe Montana and the Super Bowl. He's in the huddle with his teammates and something happens and he looks over and goes, isn't that John Candy? Mm-hmm. Like, some people have the ability to sort of, it's the ice water in their veins. They can just block it out. And some people get in front of a larger crowd and it's like, oh my God, now I'm there. There are certain crowd sizes where all of a sudden you start seeing faces. And I have to imagine, having never played at Fenway or Dodger Stadium or Yankee Stadium, it's harder to see faces in a crowd of 30, 40, 60,000 than it is of 30, 40, 100.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, once you get to that level where there are thousands of fans and there's this, you know, base amount of noise, the base decibel level, then it just becomes a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
You're used to it. It really doesn't impact you. And then, if you're not used to it, then all of a sudden you go play the Rays. There's only a couple thousand fans and everything that you hear, everything they say you hear, because it's like some random sound that you're not expecting because the place looks like it's
right,
empty.
Right, right. It, I don't know. I think back to high school. The biggest crowd we played in front of wasn't, and this will kind of tie into some of the stuff that we'll talk about with our guests later. The biggest crowd that we played in front of wasn't necessarily there because we were playing well, although we were like top five in the county, having a really good year. They showed up because it was a rivalry game. There were two high schools in my town in California. There was Corona Del Mar and there was Newport Harbor. And we all knew each other. All the CDM guys knew all the Harbor guys. Like, we all had played Little League together, Harbor area baseball. Like, this is before travel days, but we all knew each other. And everybody was kind of buddies off the field. But somehow this whole thing started up where there was going to be a fight during the game, like a beanball war. Something had this was going on 28 years ago. Something had happened where that was the logical answer. And so we all sort of fed into it. Like, there's going to be beanballs. There's going to be a fight at the field. I'm going to guess we probably had 500 or 600 people there for a high school baseball game. Wooden bleachers, everything. The place was packed. And
was it a playoff game?
No, it was a regular season game.
That's a lot of fans for a regular season.
And we were warned by the principal of the school that
before the game
that, because obviously he's getting wind of it too.
Right. Well, these are some serious rumors. The principal knows about it.
Right. We were warned that if there was a fight, the consequences would be severe. And so this is maybe a month and a half before graduation. They had already, in our town, had this policy called zero tolerance, where if you were caught doing really anything that, there's alcohol, if there was any illegal substances, if there was really just about anything, even some behavior issues, they were free to do an intra-district transfer. So there were kids that I went to high school with that I didn't graduate with because they said, all right, dude, you know, X happened, we're going to send you to the other school.
Wow.
So I think people were a little bit mindful of that. Like, I would like to graduate with my buddies. So, we had this huge crowd there and everybody was kind of thirsty for blood. And we didn't give it to them. I don't even remember anything about, like, it was one of those sloppy games. It was like an 8-7 game. I remember very few details. But that was, the usual was, it was the players or the players' parents were at the games, whether home or visitors, girlfriends, friends. And that was about the extent of an audience. You know, and even I remember going to games at USC when I was in college. We'd go and I would bring reading for classes because I knew that there would be 100 people at a Division I college baseball game in an afternoon, you know, on like a random Thursday afternoon, beautiful Southern California day. Like, And I would go there, yeah, because I love baseball, but I would go there because I could sit in the sun and read. Like, yeah. So, you know, and you look now, a lot of the D1 baseball programs, these things are sold out. Nobody's doing their homework.
Well, yeah, it depends. It's sort of a regional thing. If you're in California, you're down in Texas, Louisiana, maybe Florida, you've got those baseball programs that will sell out. It's almost like, it's not quite like college football in the South, but it's markedly different than anything in the Northeast, you know, that I'm used to seeing. And that really does go into what kind of a program do you have? And it's something that can really be attractive to an athlete is, I know I'm going to get to play in this environment.
Yep.
You know, regularly, that's a really big deal. If you have a crowd that you know is going to be there, they're going to be raucous, it just makes it more fun.
Yeah, it. And you, when you think about college football players too, that's the other thing. Am I going to be on TV? Or whether it's football, basketball, whatever, am I going to be on TV? Am I going to have the opportunity on the biggest stage to showcase my talents? Because even if I am a bit player in this thing, somebody looks at it and says, well, he went to LSU. Like, and there's video of, hey, you're a second string, whatever at LSU, but guess what? The first string guy got hurt and now you're playing cornerback. You make an interception. All right, great. That's the reason a lot of people will go to a bigger program for a lesser role because, hey, I should be in that bigger role. And if I get that opportunity, then I'll be able to make it for myself. So yeah, you could see that as a selling point, obviously. So, as it turns out, and our next guest or our only guest in today's program, they wanted more people to go to the, I will refer to them in the NCAA parlance because that's what I can think of, the non-revenue generating sports,
right?
You know, everything that's not football and basketball. Football and basketball, you can get people too. And it's one thing you and I have seen in the time that we've been doing these games, there are sometimes that you and I will look at it and go, this is going to be a marquee matchup. This would be a great game to go to, and this is going to be an awesome game to do. And I'm talking more about basketball than anything else. And sometimes you walk in and you go, this is kind of empty. And so this is a part, this is an organization formed by student athletes to try to get more kids to go to games, which, hey, gets you out of the house. It gets you off the, you know, yeah, you can, I guess, Snapchat or Instagram from there, but it gives you a reason to interact with your friends, which is awesome.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, you mentioned some of the empty-ish gyms at times, but then they, it, you know, I've also noticed they fill up pretty quickly on a lot of these basketball games and the football game, it's usually full. But, you know, that's one of the things that impacts the amount of fans, I think, is the sort of, if you build it, they will come. You have the infrastructure with the football stadium and the basketball gym,
yep,
where you can fill it up. You know, some sports, you don't have as much of a welcoming environment for fans.
Golf.
Like golf, you can't be in one place and see all the action. Swimming, you're usually in a smaller structure where there's not a ton of stands. I mean, maybe there are some, but the, you know, it's not like the football bleachers.
And swimming, it's tough determining who's who.
Yeah.
You know, all right. I know who Michael Phelps is, but outside of that, it's tough to determine which person is which and who's doing what. Gymnastics is much the same way. The home gym for Bedford is Gymnastics Village down in Amherst, which really doesn't have a whole lot of spectating areas. So, I mean, some of these don't lend themselves. Baseball, even to a degree, baseball has a metal bleacher on either side. But if you go to a baseball game, you'll see fans lined up either side, basically along the fence, but it's tough to sell that as, hey, come watch a game. You're going to be on your feet for the next 2.5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. If you think about it, if those bleachers on each side are full, and then you've got people lining the fence all the way around, basically from dugout to dugout, first base to third base, if you've got that amount of people, beyond that, it wouldn't be a very good experience as a spectator, because you have to, you're standing and you're not even in the front at the fence.
Yeah,
you don't even have a good view of the action.
Yeah, so it so what these girls are trying to do is get more people to sports that are typically off the radar. And in celebration of this, I did reach out to a couple coaches to try to get coaches on the show of some sports that we don't typically have on, because we usually do a weekly segment with Coach Matthews, which that is the air quotes revenue generating sport in high school football. But even though nobody actually charges for the games, they charge for parking. But that all goes back into the kitty at the athletic department. But the idea is to get more people out, so more people feel support. They've started an Instagram account as well, and they're posting Instagram stories, posts on a regular basis. It's a cool concept. And the difficulty always with something like this is they're doing it as seniors now. Somehow they're going to have to find a way to pass the torch to next year's seniors so that this doesn't get lost, because there's a lot of enthusiasm behind it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to finding out about it.
So do we want to stay on and just call them? Or, all right, we're going to go to a break then. Fine. We're going to make Harry do work today. You are listening to Fox on Sports for now on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we're excited today because we have some student athlete guests, which somebody actually filled out a survey on the 105.1 website and said you need more student athlete guests. So, like, this works out perfectly. So, Ella Irwin, Allie Morgan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for having me.
Hi.
these two have started up the BHS dog section, which is an Instagram page that I found out about earlier this week. I work in digital marketing, and so you guys are doing a really good job at, you know, I'm watching what you guys are doing. I'm like, all right, what can I learn from this? So that's cool. What made you both decide to start the organization?
Well, we were sitting at a little cafe called Inside Scoop on, like, the first day of school,
yep.
And it's our senior year, so we were just pondering, like, how's our last year of high school, and we have to make it the best that it can be, and we kind of wanted to involve a lot of people that didn't usually get involved, and we both love sports, so we wanted to get everybody involved, and we decided to just create something that would have, like, a positive impact on a lot of people, and it would be fun for everybody. Yeah, and just, like, include all sports, because, like, we know it's a huge thing for, like, everyone to go to the home football games, and we wanted to make, like, carry that energy from football to all the other sports that don't get the same attention that they deserve.
So it's a lot of fun to see, and it's a lot of fun to see the stories that you're posting. And I guess I've already sort of buried the lead in the second question. How are you getting the word out about the other sports?
Yeah, so we have this Instagram page. Ella actually is the one that created it and added me to it, so we can both add, post, share, whatever. Basically, we advertised it from our own, like, personal Instagrams to go follow it. And then once it started growing and growing,
people started talking about it. People were
reposting it and, like, putting it on other forms of social media. We put it out through Twitter. And then it started growing, and now it's just become, like, a big thing in our class, in our school.
And it got so much more attention than we were expecting, which also helped spread the word, because, like, we thought it would just be, like, our senior friends and stuff, and then underclassmen started following and showing up to the games and stuff.
Sports team.
Yeah, and last week we were taught puppy at our school, which is just, like, a recognition thing, and then teachers and administration found out about it and started following.
Parents.
Yeah.
And contacting us and saying, like, thank you for, you know, supporting our, like, kids, like, it really is, like, affecting them in a positive way, and it just kind of helped the message grow. Yeah.
That's wonderful to hear. So you've been talking about the message spreading. Tell us a little bit about some results that you've seen in terms of people actually attending games that maybe before they wouldn't have.
Well, the first home girl soccer game was really when we, like, realized it was bigger than what we thought it was going to be, because, like, how many people do you think showed up? Like, 50?
There was, like, 50 at least, yeah.
And filled, like, pretty much half the stands, probably, yeah. Which is a lot. Usually, like, no students go to a girls' soccer game, you know? And so it was so fun to, like, see everyone show up, and everyone was, like, happy and yelling loud. Yeah.
And it really does get contagious when you're there and you're with your friends, and this is something that's fun that we can be a part of. I mean, I remember, God, there were, they wound up when I was in college playing some volleyball games on campus or some basketball games on campus. And it used to be, I went to college out in California, you would have to go to an arena which was about a mile walk away. And instead, because it was right after one of the LA earthquakes, they played the game on campus. And so we had this little tiny arena with 3,000 people. You'd usually get a couple thousand people at these basketball games. And the place was packed and people were lining up. And we all felt like, for one day, we felt like we were at Duke. We're trying to pack this little 3,000 seat on campus gym. And it kind of has that same effect. Like, wait, if he's going to get in line at 4 o'clock, I have to get in line at 3:45 because I got to get better seats than he does. It was just, it's contagious. So for both of you at the, and who started the BHS dog section, what are some of the sports and stories that people need to know about? Some of the stuff that's been ignored so far.
I think one of the things was, going back to like the first soccer game, people didn't really know, like, if anyone was going to show up. Like, you were like, are people going to this game? Like, it's been advertised a lot. And then everybody showed up, and, like, it kind of just gave us a feeling of unity. Like, oh, like, we're all going to do this for each other. And after that, like, it started kind of booming, and everyone started talking about it. And there was one particular thing where, like, we have a freshman soccer goalie. She starts. And so we made a big deal about it, like with cheering, like we were like, she's a freshman, like number 32, all this, like our goalie's a freshman. And that's actually the one where her mom like reached out to us, and we took a picture with her after the game. Like, we made her feel really special because, I mean, she's amazing.
Yeah, she was awesome.
So it was just kind of genuine, and like, it just, we saw like what a positive impact it made on her and like on just like her family and like all of her friends. So we liked that feeling. And
we remember being like scared freshmen, and like, obviously the seniors look like adults to you when you're a freshman and you seem like so much younger, you know? So it was nice to like, that's when it kind of hit us that like, oh,
we can make an impact.
Yeah. Like we can do something.
Not even do anything. Like we enjoy this and it makes an impact. So like, it's like, we're not like, it's just like a good thing to do. Yeah.
That's great.
And everyone kind of wanted to be a part of it, I feel like. Once the first soccer game happened, the next one was even a bigger crowd because everyone was like, oh my God, that game looked so fun if they didn't go, or that game was so fun if they did go. So everyone just showed out.
And that's the best thing you can do as a fan, is to impact your team's performance in a positive way. And certainly you're doing that. And, you know, Lauren and I have seen girls' soccer games at Bedford. Coach Winning has a great program. We just talked about in recent shows how she's had a 200 wins as a coach. So certainly a lot certainly a lot to appreciate as you're there watching as a fan. Now, have the two of you found that the Bedford High School teams in general have a similar style, or have you found that each team has its own unique vibe, and so it's important to go see, you know, more than just a few sports to learn something and help contribute to these individual teams?
Every team definitely has their own vibe and style of like how to go about it, but I think overall Bedford's like has a united like energy,
pride and energy
about our sports teams, and like it's just always been like that. I think like every sports team is important at Bedford, and like I think we're just like kind of setting that in stone and by like going to all the games.
Even our school in general is like very hyped up. Like we always are considered to be good at athletics, and so that sometimes can put a lot of pressure on people. So we like, it's good to make it like a fun thing where like we're also just like enjoying ourselves, and like this is a good way that we like are prideful of our school and our sport.
It's certainly a lot to be proud about, a lot of success on the field, and the way that the teams perform is fun to see as well. Now, for each of you, what role has sports played in your lives up to this point?
Well, I just started doing field hockey and alpine ski racing my sophomore year, so this will be my third year at both those sports. And it's really just, it's different to be a part of a team. Like my freshman year, all throughout like my childhood and until freshman year, I did dance at Bedford Dance Center, which is a very individual sport. Like you have your classes and stuff, but it's very individual. And being a part of a team just totally changes like how you work together and how close you get with these people that you wouldn't have become friends with otherwise. And it just brings people together overall, and it just helped me a lot, like through my high school career. Yeah, and for me, I've always played basketball, I guess. I played soccer throughout, like, my childhood, which was always fun. Like, that's how I made a lot of my friends, was through sports. And I still play basketball, so, like, that's been, like, all 4 years at BHS. And like Ella said, like, it's just something that, it's just this, a feel of being a part of a team and a community that, like, all you all share the same goal and the same, like, motivations. And going to practice every day, going to games, like, team sleepovers, like pasta parties, all that. Like, it just creates this this new, like, feeling that is really, really important, I feel like, for high schoolers.
And for our listeners too, the first speaker there was Ella Irwin, and the second one was Allie Morgan. And Allie, we're used to seeing you on the basketball court. And for you, what is it? How is it different, not just being a fan, but being sort of one of the hubs of this whole little super fan network that's going on now?
It's definitely super rewarding. I actually have the benefit of, I'm the BHS flag holder, I guess, is what you call it. Our, like, team flag, I, like, hold it and, like, wave it at football games, soccer games, like, everything. It's kind of just, like, it's a big symbol of our spirit, and it, like, kind of just hypes people up. So, having that, I feel like really propelled, like, just me, like, my mindset in general for being super hype and, like, kind of leading, not, like, caring what people think, about being super energetic and, like, supportive. So, it's definitely a lot different than, like, playing versus being a fan. But it brings an equal feeling of being, like, a part of a community and helping people, like, just helping in general.
You know, it's funny, though, and I'm looking at Hanson while I say this, your style of play on the basketball court is not unlike what you just described. I mean, you're energetic. You leave it all out there on the floor. And
it's true.
And you're doing the same. You're doing the same exact thing here. It's just you're taking the energy, and instead of channeling it to, I'm trying to help my team win, I'm trying to help everybody else's team win and perform better and really improve their overall high school experience at the same time.
For sure.
So, all right, one more question and then we'll let you guys go. This thing is, obviously, school's been in session for the better part of 3 weeks. So it's premature. We still have a long way until the end of the school year. But all right, let's say the rest of the year continues and you guys are cranking and everybody's happy and people are still going to sporting events. How do you pass the torch for next year?
Well, we kind of have to evaluate our juniors right now.
Yeah.
And see who's going to step up for next year and hand down the account.
Probably. A lot of people have been stepping up, too. Like, it isn't just our grade.
Yeah.
Like, there have been a lot of even sophomores, freshmen that are participating. So I feel like they love, like, what we're doing. Like, they, like, are involved in it. So I feel like they'll want to continue it. We're hoping that, like, that's something that, like, naturally will, like, pass on to a few individuals that, like, have what it takes, I guess.
It's, I like it. All right. So we'll let you guys go. I feel like I just drank a Red Bull.
That's how we always feel.
We always feel like that.
Oh, I am just ready to conquer the day. So, Allie, Ella,
awesome.
Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for what you've done for the other sports, and we're glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Take care.
You Bye. Too. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was fun. That was Allie Morgan and Ella Irwin, who started the BHS dog section. If you have the Instagram, you can follow them at BHS dog, D-A-W-G section. It's a fun follow. It's like, literally, they're the ones who, when I look at my feed, there's always a story that's popping up of field hockey or soccer or, I mean, it really... It's like SportsCenter for Bedford.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, you're getting, oh yeah, hey, this is going on. Hey, like, it's awesome, though. It's a clearinghouse for Bedford sports.
I really like the answer about how you're going to pass the torch. I mean, if there was any doubt that this would move forward, that should be erased by this mentality of, this isn't like some sort of a burden or just some sort of a title that you just pass on to anybody. I mean, they're taking it seriously. Like, you have to prove yourself if you want to lead this organization after this year.
I mean, how often, though, you think about where they are in their lives. Like, they're applying to colleges now. How often does your essay for your college application, I have no idea what the college application process looks like now, although in 4 years, I'm sure I will. How often does your college application essay or your interview topic fall in your lap like that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, those two, first of all, like the way that they present themselves and the energy that they bring, like, that's hard to ignore. But then when you take on top of it the fact that, hey, we started this thing, we basically built it from nothing, and now we have a network of people that are reporters. Like, dude, that's amazing.
And the fun thing to see will be how it does evolve, you know, not just with, okay, maybe there are some energetic leaders next year who are doing something similar, but their goal probably, if you think about it, is you get the students out to these other events and they gain so much from it that they just keep doing it naturally, well, year after year. And that is what the snowball keeps rolling and growing, and it becomes part of the culture for Bedford students and Bedford athletics.
Right. And you think about how much attention is paid to negative things. And we alluded to it with both of them. Here's a positive thing, and a really, if you wanted to, if you were a student at the school, you could have your social calendar, your dance card filled out immediately, because you always know if it's, even if it's a field hockey game and I don't have homework that day, I'm just going to go down and watch because I know I'm going to run into somebody. And even if I don't run into somebody, sit in the stands. It's a nice day. It's fall. Like,
absolutely.
Like, you know, it's, I don't know, it goes back to what I was talking about being in college. Like, I went because I knew I was going to be able to watch baseball. But, like, I'm in Southern California. I'm sitting in the sun. I'm reading, in air quotes, I'm reading for a philosophy class. Like, I'm doing all this stuff at the same time. Like, nothing sucks about this. So, you know, that's the ultimate goal anyway, right?
Absolutely.
As many positive experiences as you can. So, Allie, Ella, thank you guys for coming and joining us, or at least taking time out of your day. Do you want to take a break or do we want to keep cranking?
Let's take a break. I want to set up another fan experience that we need to talk about.
All right. So, with that being said, you're listening to Fox on Sports, to be named later on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And sports and things.
And fans and things.
Yeah.
And stadiums.
Yes.
And cheers.
Yeah.
And home and visitors. So there was some big news in Boston this week.
Yes.
At perhaps the greatest sporting location in the world.
The most beloved ballpark in America.
That's Fenway Park, of course.
I mean, that's the term that they gave it. Well, I mean, you can
They didn't give it that term when it opened.
I know.
They earned it.
You can call anything whatever you want. Like, the St. Louis Cardinal fans love to refer to themselves as
the nicest fans in baseball.
The best fans in baseball. But I was watching, God, I can't even remember who they were playing over the weekend, maybe the Nationals. And it was like watching, it was seriously like somebody was selling tickets to go watch a library. Like, you would think the Cardinals are involved in a pennant race. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. The wild card spots are still up for grabs. And the Midwesterners were checking their phones and snoozing. Like, yeah. The place was, by Cardinal standards, which I think are somewhat loose, but, you know, you count your attendance however you want to, I guess. By Cardinal standards, it was a sellout, but it really wasn't sold out. And it turned out, you know, they were playing the Brewers over the weekend because that one was the day that Ryan Braun won it, or Ryan Braun hit a 3-2, two-out grand slam, and the Brewers held on to win that game 7-6. But I was listening to that while I was mowing my lawn. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Fenway, you know, it's smaller. It's, what is it, just shy of 40,000 capacity. And it usually is a little bit more raucous than a place like St. Louis.
Yes.
And one of the most recent experiences there that, you know, fans of the Red Sox remember, you know, they have so many memories, but the most recent one was a sort of a family event with the Yastrzemskis.
Yeah. That was crazy.
The one and only Carl Yastrzemski, who manned left field for over two decades in Boston. His grandson is playing in the major leagues now for the San Francisco Giants, Mike Yastrzemski.
Yeah.
He comes to town, and Bruce Bochy, the manager for the Giants, does something that's very smart. He bats him leadoff and has him play left field, even though he usually plays right field. What a great thing for a manager to do, to recognize this moment and put the grandson where he belongs, in front of the Green Monster.
I was going to say, you hope. Can you imagine, first of all, having monster seats for what would look to be a complete throwaway game in what for the Red Sox isn't a bad season, but it's not going to be a playoff season. And for the Giants, like, they had a flash of brilliance in July and then went back to being the Giants again. But can you imagine, you have monster seats and you look down and you're like, wait a second, Yastrzemski. The only problem is he's wearing 5 and not 8. But, you know, you wonder if genetically, is he predisposed to figuring out the bounces off the Green Monster the way that his grandfather did once? It's to go back to what we were talking about earlier. Some people, first of all, Mike Yastrzemski isn't young. By any stretch, he's 28. He is an old rookie. So that's one thing. The other thing is, can you imagine the adrenaline? Not only he's playing in Fenway for the first time. Okay, big deal.
Thank you, Interleague.
Yeah, exactly. They mentioned that on ESPN this morning. Fenway is full. Big deal. And you're not on the exact same grass, but you're in the same geographic area that your grandfather patrolled for that long. Like, there's a lot all going on at the same time. And hey, the kid came up strong, man.
Oh, he did.
He the moment was there and he rose to it.
He belted that pitch into the center field seats, home run in his first game in this environment. You mentioned all those connections. He also grew up in the Boston area. He grew up a Red Sox fan. And so in his first game, under those conditions, he hits a home run, and the crowd appreciates him and is loud and is cheering for him as if he was a Red Sox himself. And I know that meant a lot to him. I mean, what an experience with all of his friends and family there. And then game two of the series, Yaz throws out the first pitch. He throws it to him, his grandson. So just a really neat thing to see in Fenway Park.
Yeah, and it's, you know, baseball, the one of the, I'll call it, selling points or narratives that baseball has put forth, and you know, I dispute it, but it is the generational thing. It's the fathers playing catch with sons of baseball. You know, some of us would say it's fathers playing catch with daughters, right here. But there is that generational aspect of the game. You know, it's the James Earl Jones speech in Field of Dreams, like. And so when you have this, I mean, I remember when Mike Yastrzemski got called up earlier this year, it almost seemed like he is 29 now, by the way. It almost seemed like this was kind of a throwaway. Like, he's going to come up and then he's going to go right back down. He's hit 20 homers this season.
Yeah, and not a full season.
And he's having a good year. Like, even if the Giants don't keep using him, somebody will find a spot for him somewhere. So he's played himself into a roster spot for a few years.
Yeah, he really has. And so that's great to see. And one of the stats that came out this week that jumped out at me was the reference to Yaz's last home run in Fenway Park, which was in 1983.
Yep.
And I also saw the stat that Yaz is currently 80 years old.
Yep.
So I did some quick math.
He was old. I mean,
Yaz 36 started years ago. That means he was 44 when he hit his last home run in Fenway.
Yes.
That's impressive.
I mean, Yaz broke in. Ted Williams was still playing.
Yeah, he played 23 years for the Red Sox. And that's also something that was fun in the article, when the grandson, Mike, said, when I became 23 years old, that's when it hit me. He said, wow. So for my entire life, yeah, my grandfather was playing left field for the Red Sox. So just an amazing story of longevity. But
interesting. But, so Elder Yaz played in the major leagues 23 years. This will give you an idea, and was a slugger, was known as a slugger in the time that he played. 453 career home runs. In those 23 years, I'm going to hit you with trivia before you hit me with trivia. In those 23 years, how many times do you think Carl Yastrzemski hit more than 20 home runs?
Well, let's see.
Yeah,
453 over 23 years, so he's averaging about 20 per year. So I'm going to give him, I'm going to give him 8 years over 20.
Okay, so 7 years over 20.
Okay.
He had 1 year at 20. But
And his grandson already has 20 in his first.
To me, that's just testament of how the game has changed. Like, I remember going to
If he was a slugger today and he played 23 years, that number would be like 15.
Yeah. Yes. Yaz, if, you know, and obviously you can't project anything, but you have to figure that a guy who was hitting 20 then would have been like a Pete Alonso, Cody Bellinger. Like, if you went to a game in the 70s and 80s and a player hit a home run, that, like, one player hit a home run, that was a big deal.
Yeah, you go to a game and you hope to see one.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't, we don't have fireworks every night then. We had fireworks a couple times a year. Yes. Home runs were, like, if a guy hit two, like, I still remember guys hitting three home runs from the 70s and 80s. Freddie Patek, Dan Ford, because it never happened.
Well, for lots of guys, it was a mistake.
Right.
Right? They're not going up.
Freddie Freeman.
Trying to hit home runs like Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
Right? And it just happened repeatedly. But now, of course, the batters with the launch angle are trying to hit home runs. The game has changed. But I want to get to another guy with longevity.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mentioned how I loved what Bruce Bochy did as a manager. He saw the moment. He said, we're going to play Yaz in left field.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking back to the beginning of the year. Do you remember when we talked about Ichiro and the game over in Japan where he's about to retire from playing?
Yeah.
And do you remember what the broadcasters were saying during the game? The whole mentality and the whole theme was, as after he'd had a couple at bats, is, well, how long is Scott Servais going to keep him in the game? When is he going to pull him? You know, when is he going to, you know, turn the page and focus on winning this game? And in hindsight, I just think that is absolutely ridiculous. Because, first of all, Ichiro is one of the best hitters to ever live.
Yes.
And he's certainly still in fine physical condition. And I mean, if you told me right now he doesn't play, he really is retired, he doesn't play, in 5 years he comes back to the diamond, I would say he could go out there and have a better chance of getting a hit than a lot of the players on the Mariners. So why would they be so nervous about, gosh, we can't let him play the whole game? I mean, I think the thing to do there would have been let him get every single at-bat he can. And, you know, that's more important than, you know, the 5% chance that a pinch hitter is going to have more of a chance of getting on base than Ichiro, which I'm not even sure is true. And so I just like how Bruce Bochy handled this situation in comparison to that one, where I think you should have let Ichiro play, you know, every inning possible as long as he could.
Well, I think you're wrong, and here's why.
Okay.
The Mariners have 64 wins this year. They have 88 losses. If they won that game, they would be 65-87.
I know it.
That's very important.
It is.
I mean, you don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But I was being sarcastic, by the way. I think there are times that it is when a guy can gracefully exit. And what I mean when I say that is a guy gets a base hit and you know that he's going to retire and he's going to get his round of applause. And I'm going to, hey, he gets the round of applause. He waves. Baseball goes into the dugout. He rides off into the sunset. Pinch runner comes in. That's that. We didn't, with Ichiro, we didn't really get that passing of the torch because he didn't get hits. And so there was no real, like, the easy opportunity is the guy gets a base hit. You send somebody else out. You know, you send D. Gordon out to pinch run for him. Everybody cheers and what, like, but, you know, that wasn't there. The other thing is, and we've talked about this as it pertains to Sports Talk Radio, we always have to have something to complain about. Like, there's always got to be somebody second-guessing something, even if we all know that something is just wrong. There's always somebody who's going to say that it's right, so that the fact that they say that it's right gets retweeted by somebody, and then people start arguing, and all of a sudden it's like, now we know who this guy was, and we didn't know who he was before. Like, dumb. They're contrarians for the sake of being contrarians. And don't tell me, I think there are a lot of sports talk radio guys who will sit there and say, your position is that Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. My position is that Tom Brady would have been worse than Mark Sanchez if the Jets had picked him.
Right.
Like, okay, so now we're going to argue this. Like, And then it becomes, well, you know, so-and-so, Fox says that Tom Brady's worse than Mark Sanchez. Like, but then now he's a thing. I mean, and there are entire billion-dollar websites, Barstool, that have come out of that.
Right.
So, go. Like, I mean, it's an industry.
Yeah. And I agree. I mean, if Ichiro had slapped one through the hole between short and third in the fifth inning, and then Scott Servais had taken him out, great. That's natural. Just handle the moment the right way and, you know, let Ichiro's performance dictate it. But we're not gonna be talking about pinch hitting for him in the sixth inning because we need to win this game. That's not what we're gonna do.
If you're the Mariners, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't.
Right.
So
let's get back to appreciating Bruce Bochy. And let's get into some baseball trivia because it's been too long for Lauren here. He's kind of jonesing for some baseball trivia, I can tell. So I'm going to give you a tough one, all right? I want you to try to name the 11 managers in Major League Baseball history with at least 2,000 wins.
Connie Mack, John McGraw.
1 and 2 on the list. He's already knocked them off in the first 5 seconds.
Tommy Lasorda is on the list. Sparky Anderson. Whitey Herzog. Tony La Russa. How many is that I have?
You've named 6.
I've named 6. Wow. Leo DeRocher?
You've named 7.
Wow.
You're not 7 for 7, but you've named 7. You get 11 guesses. You need to get at least 6 to win this.
I already got 6.
No, you've gotten 5.
Oh, okay.
You're 5 for 7.
Okay. People get bored when there's dead air, and it's really hard to talk and think at the same time.
I'm going to talk for a minute because,
first of all, you're
doing an excellent job. I did this morning as I was getting ready for the show, and it took me about 10 minutes to come up with my 9 guesses because I just couldn't get the older managers, the names. I knew that they were there. I just hadn't done this.
Do I get Bruce Bochy as a thing? Is he one of mine?
You can name him as a guest.
Okay. Because I know he has 2,000 now.
Yes, he does. He just got it. That's what prompted this trivia.
Joe Torre? That's a random one.
That's a guess.
You've
made 9 guesses. You get
Gene
2 more.
Gene Mock.
You've made 10 guesses.
I get 2 more?
You get 1 more.
1 more.
Make it a good one.
Pick me a winner, Bobby. I got 1 more.
There you go, Elizabeth. That one
Casey
was for you.
Casey Stengel.
Okay, Casey Stengel. All right. So
my team is on the floor.
Let's review Lauren's choices here. He made 11 guesses.
Yep.
And he was successful on 7 of them. He went 7 for 11, so he wins the trivia challenge.
Even backdoor
little
Joe.
7 for 11.
I pulled out the cash flow.
You got.
Then we played Bones, and I'm yelling Domino.
Okay, so your last
buddy I know.
Your last guess, Casey Stengel,
I can't
was
keep doing Ice Cube.
No.
Okay,
Casey Stengel. That was a nice guess, but he was 12th all time at 1905 in terms of wins.
Okay.
You also guessed Gene Mock, who's close, but he's 13th. All right, so you got number 12 and 13. The question was not top 13 wins. It was top 11. So maybe
still,
you missed.
Solid.
You didn't hear that correctly. Lasorda is in at number 22. That was the Dodgers homer vote in Lauren. He's at 1599. Okay, so he's in 22nd place.
Really?
And let's see, you said Whitey Herzog. Nice little Royals flavor there.
And Cardinals, too.
He's 37th at 1281.
Wow.
Okay, so those were your worst guesses.
Okay, interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
But you nailed 7, and you got 1, 2, and 3. Connie Mack, number 1. John McGraw, number 2. Tony La Russa, number 3. Kind of surprised you missed number 4.
I forgot about him.
Oh, you're already looking at the list?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He couldn't even wait.
No, I can't.
He had to get his own report card.
Yep.
His own visual. That's Bobby Cox of the Braves. He's one of the ones I guessed. Joe Torre, number 5. You got Sparky Anderson, number 6. See, 7, 8, and 9.
Sparky Anderson was the bat boy at USC in 1948.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's where he got started. So you missed 7, 8, and 9. Probably everybody listening, almost everybody would have missed those. Those are the old managers, Bucky Harris, Joe McCarthy, Walter Austin.
I should have had Walter Austin. He was the Dodgers manager before Tommy and had 24 consecutive one-year contracts.
Well, that'll keep you up tonight, I'm sure.
Yep.
Number 10, you got Leo DeRocher, and number 11, Bruce Bochy. So great for Bochy to get to 2,000. He said that this is his last year managing, so that's fun. You know, he's certainly deserving. Just for enjoyment's sake, I made 9 guesses, and I got 6 of them. I got Connie Mack, I got La Russa, I got Bobby Cox, who you didn't mention, I got Joe Torre, I got Sparky Anderson and Bruce Bochy. My three guesses that missed were Terry Francona, who he will get there. He's at number 18 on
the
list.
Yeah, give him a couple years.
So give me 5 years and I would have gotten that one correct. I also guessed Lasorda, and I was going through the teams and thinking, all right, let me think of an old-time manager. So I went with Earl Weaver.
I love Earl Weaver.
With the Orioles. He's in at number 26.
Have you ever watched any of the YouTube videos of Earl Weaver yelling at umpires?
I think I've seen
it's really good. Yeah.
Do we have time for football trivia?
Yeah, we can do that. We have about a minute and a half.
Okay, ready? So this is just this is football trivia. It's only one question.
All right.
All right. So with Eli Manning giving way this weekend to Daniel Jones.
Yep.
The trivia question is, who did Eli Manning replace as the Giants quarterback?
Sid Luckman.
That's
a football joke, kids.
This happened in 2004.
Jeff Hostetler. Phil Sims. Who did he replace as the Giants quarterback in 2004?
I would be very impressed if you got this.
Cleo Lemon. No, he was a Jet. Ray Lucas. No, he was a Dolphin.
This is somebody you don't think of as a Giants quarterback. That's why it's so hard. Have you got it at home? If you have by now, you win. You beat Lauren. But I don't know. It'd be tough. So somebody who's known as a Rams quarterback.
Dan Pastorini.
St. Louis Rams.
Pat Hayden. Kurt Warner?
Yeah, Kurt Warner. Weird. Can you believe that? He was a Giants quarterback in 2004.
Trying to see how many random 1980s football players I can throw out there. Vince Ferragamo.
Do you think 20 years from now, somebody will ask who took over who did Daniel Jones take over for, and they won't be able to remember?
So it's Eli Manning is a generational, I don't think he's a generational talent, but he's a generational player, and that he's been around just for a really long time. The thing that I wonder about if you're the Giants is you don't have a whole lot of strength around him. And so there's part of me that wonders, do you do more damage than good? And I, not a Giants fan. We should have had Jeff Byer on so he could talk about it. But do you do more damage than good of going to the young guy now where he doesn't have a whole lot around him and people are going to be calling for his head if he's not performing?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think that is in his favor is he performed well in the preseason when he's out there. But you're right. If Sterling Shepard, who's really their best wide receiver now, if he's not playing with a concussion, all you have to throw to really is Evan Ingram. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest challenge is, are you setting him up to succeed? And I think that putting him in week three of the season, while it is throwing carnage to the masses, you're giving them what they want, ultimately, is it going to be the best thing for the kid's career? I don't know. I mean, I'm not Dave Gettleman. I'm not the guy running the show over there. So heavy lies the head that wears the crown. He gets to make the decisions and ultimately see how they play out.
The bonus reward here, though, is that Eli gets to retire with a 500 record as a starter, 161 and 161. So maybe the Giants did him a favor by making the decision now as opposed to in another week or two.
He is the Charlie Huff of NFL quarterbacks, 216 and 216. What the thing that I didn't realize, going back to your managerial thing, and then we got to go because I actually have to work today. The Bruce Bochy is under 500 as a manager.
Is he?
Yeah, but everybody talks about him like he's a foregone conclusion as Hall of Famer.
22 games under, but he has multiple World Series rings.
He has three World Series.
And sometimes with managing baseball, you got to manage the hand that you're dealt, and it's not built to win in the early years, then there's only so much you can do.
Right. He had some, but I mean, don't forget too, he also took the Padres to the World Series 1 year.
I will not forget that. Where they proceeded to get swept.
They proceeded to get swept, but that was a Padres team that probably shouldn't have been
in the World Series.
In the World Series. Yeah. I went to game four of that series at Jack Murphy Stadium or Qualcomm or whatever it was called. So anyway, all right, that's it. Sincere thanks to our guests, Allie Morgan and Ella Irwin, for joining us and talking about the BHS dog section. You can find them on Instagram at BHSDAWG section. I shouldn't have to spell that. If you have the Instagram, thanks to Hanson for his sparkling trivia today. And thanks to you for listening. Have a wonderful sports week. We will catch you next week. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.